Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Monday, December 5th, 2022 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. It is a wild and dystopic ride, to be sure. And here we are. We're in the throes of the holiday season, the holy day season, the Christmas season. We have allowed ourselves to degrade or be degraded, and here we are. History is a big psyop, and so we're unpacking that a little bit, and hopefully we can keep what matters and maybe dispense with what doesn't. And there is much manipulation throughout history, it seems. So let's begin with the announcements, shall we? So, to begin with, the Christmas countdown, what I'm calling the Holy Day Countdown, and for those who don't know, Arnold J. Toynbee, for example, is one who, in his history or study of history and a kind of a broad study of the civilizations of the world, identified as one of the sort of defining characteristics of shaping and guiding and directing civilizations, language. Some have observed that language is man's first technology, you might say. And it has been used in that sort of fashion, but unbeknownst, I would say, to the unwashed masses, so to speak. In other words, this is one of those kinds of Clark's third law types of things. And it happens right out in plain sight. As Arnold J. Toynbee points out, these things do not happen by accident. So, I probably should just read from Toynbee's study of history. Toynbee identifies language as a way to convert entire civilizations to religious or secular proclivity. Entire civilization, just by the subtle transition of language, you know, the conversion of words like cleric to clerk, and conversion of souls becomes the conversion of a stock, and those kinds of things. And if you're paying attention in America, you're seeing these things. And even Toynbee admitted that what arises, what breaks out of the chrysalis of the Respublica Christiana, is not a good thing. What follows is not a good thing. And that's what we have happening in the West. But I would argue that's part and parcel to the Hellenistic influence that's always been at work since there was a West, so to speak. And that's been kind of the secret destiny that Manly P. Hall wrote about. That's really not so secret. If you read the Bible, you can tell. I mean, Genesis 11 is kind of the birth of that. This thing that we hear is a, you know, a one world or a new world order, or that kind of thing. It's really not so new. It just harkens back to what happened in Genesis 11 that God disrupted. And then you see, we don't really hear about it in history. It's not a focal point. You can see evidence of it, but obviously the devil is not going to write history in such a way, or have historians write in such a way that says, well, here's what happened in Genesis 11. It was happening again at the time of the birth of Christ, and then, you know, it was disrupted again, and over the last 2,000 years or so, it's been happening again. That's, you know, that would make it too obvious, and then we would see those things, those forces happening. But Toynbee, in A Study of History, writes to this effect, that language is instrumental in changing people's minds. And so when you see celebrities using terms that have been reserved to holy ecclesiastical, call it religious, kinds of lexicon, when those terms go mainstream and are used in a very non, a kind of an irreligious and obviously not ecclesiastical sort of fashion, then when you see a lot of that in song titles, in the names and nicknames of artists, you know, Maren Morris's My Church, is that what it's called? Whatever that, the title of the song. It's that kind of thing. So, what is her church? When she's driving down the road with the windows down, that's church. And so, you know, there's a bit of plausible deniability in that. But it's, there's really no reverence in it. It's a, and that's part of a broader theme. I don't want to get too far afield, but, you know, that's the competition that we see, especially during this time of year. When you think of Santa Claus, what's wrong, Chris? You know, you're doing this movie list this Christmas season. You know, maybe some would argue that's not a good idea. I wouldn't necessarily disagree. I think it's for each of us to decide for ourselves. Hopefully we're all adults and we can decide for ourselves. And, you know, if there's something useful and edifying in there, then great. And if not, well, then disregard it. But this time of year, you know, with the Santa Claus thing, I mean, there is a very real aspect to conflating Santa Claus as God. And when you think of God as Santa Claus, well, you know, maybe he won't bring me a bike on Christmas, but at least, you know, nothing bad's going to happen. Maybe I'll get a lump of coal, but so I'm on the naughty list. Big deal. Nothing really changes. And that obviously, from a biblical standpoint, is not who God is. So, there is a reverence that you see in the Bible that these fanciful stories, and then, you know, you dig deeper into that history, and again, you know, Santa Claus is a mischievous elf that plays little tricks and things, and there is a strong Kabbalistic kind of influence throughout that history, a lot of symbolism and that kind of thing. So, interesting times, but the whole holiday season is sort of steeped in that kind of stuff. And for that matter, I have mentioned the subject of the Copernican Revolution. You know, you have Spengler's Decline of the West and the Copernican Revolution, which is really, again, it's not a new thing. The progressives that are regressive, it's not a new thing. Getting back to Genesis chapter 11 and ultimately Genesis chapter 6 is not a new idea. And so you can see down through the ages, you know, whether it's the lunar calendar or the solar calendar or what have you, there is intrigue and sophistry and an effort to delude and influence people, manipulate So speaking of Spengler and the decline of the West, you know, again, according to John Coleman, this is the strategy adopted by the, call it the invisible college contingent, the, you know, Baconian John D. society that sees all and would be seen by none. Spengler's decline of the West and the Faustian dark winter out of which emerges a, you know, something along the lines of Genesis 11, a one world system. You wipe out everything else. You create a tabula rasa on which to build, and there you go. And so the concept of the Copernican revolution is something that is particularly interesting. The Wikipedia entry for Copernican Revolution opens thusly. The Copernican Revolution was the paradigm shift from the Ptolemaic model of the heavens, which described the cosmos as having Earth stationary at the center of the universe, to the heliocentric model with the sun at the center of the solar system. This revolution consisted of two phases. First, the first being extremely mathematical in nature, and the second phase starting in 1610 with the publication of a pamphlet by Galileo. Beginning with the publication of Nicholas Copernicus' De Revolutionibus Orbium Coelestium, contributions to the revolution continued until finally ending with Isaac Newton's work over a century later. So, turning the world as we know it upside down. And what does that portend? And you have all of these figures that are mentioned that, you know, there is a, what I would call an esoteric red thread that runs through the history from before the time of Copernicus to folks like Kepler, Galileo, and Isaac Newton, Immanuel Kant, and others, all into the metaphysical, all, you know, maybe we could call them theoretical physicists who believe in the God of Spinoza, as Michio Kaku might say, and others, who read the, who are very studied in things like the Kabbalah and Zohar. Why is that? Why is that necessary to be a theoretical physicist? We should ask ourselves. Delving into the mystical. So what are the limits? You know, and this has been a question asked down through the ages. What are the limits? Where is the line that we shall not cross? And we have seen with the Copernican Revolution over, particularly in the days roughly, shall we say, since the American Revolution, since the American Revolutionary days, 1765 or so coming forward, gradually there has been a shift. And the religious center of the West has gone from the Bible and Christianity, however mangled that may be because of intrigue and manipulation and sophistry and so forth, to scientism and the God of it. So one of the things that I think is particularly interesting, we are in America, you know, in the West in general, but especially in America, because, you know, folks like de Tocqueville have observed that we have a penchant for change. We're somewhat uniquely, perhaps, predisposed to a penchant for change in America. We just love the new stuff. We love change for the sake of change. And so I think we have become victims of it, especially coming through the century of the self, as Adam Curtis put it in his documentary, four-part documentary series, opening with Bernays, the first installment on Edward Bernays. And so now we have a situation where because of the momentum, we're being driven over the edge of a cliff. The younger generations don't realize that maybe everything, you know, all that glitters might not necessarily be gold, and just because we can doesn't mean we should. But we have created this monster, or been in tow of its this sort of tractor beam that keeps us all moving. And change is considered a good thing in all cases, you know. Maybe there are exceptions, but yeah, you have to fight hard to prove it. And even when you do, it's unlikely that people are excited about and willing to renounce their views on things like that. Because, you know, again, that means that I've been a fool and I've been duped. And so the cliche attributed to Mark Twain and others, you know, it's easier to fool a man than to convince him that he's been fooled, applies with force, I would say. So that's kind of where we are in this society. And so be that all as it may, you know, and there's a lot of history in there and a lot of intrigue that goes back certainly hundreds, even thousands of years. But here we are now. And what do we do with all of that? And so part of the idea with the movie list, this holiday or holy day season, maybe I'll read from Toynbee's study of history in the next segment. I've done that a million times, but maybe it begs repeating one more time. It's interesting how that happens, and it does. It changes your attitude and your opinion and views of things in a very subtle kind of way. And, you know, again, this gets back to the meta layer of abstraction, and what I have mentioned lately, metaschematizo, why certain people who are clearly not Christian, for example, will quote scripture in a very irreligious sort of fashion. Oh, we're on a break. Stick around. I'll be right back.
Use code LIGHTHOUSE at ZStackLife.com to supercharge your immune system before cold and flu season. What can we hope for from a Republican-controlled House of Representatives? Well, if history is an example, not much. Maybe instead of bills spending $2 trillion at a time, maybe they'll only spend $1.5 trillion. Government accounts for 57% of our nation's gross domestic product. That means that every taxpayer works from January 1st through July 27th just to feed our massive, bloated, overgrown government. If we wanted to get anywhere near a balanced budget, we would have to cut spending, all spending, by nearly 25%. The last time a president was elected to cut spending, Reagan was only able to cut the growth of spending. The Uniparty in D.C. has created an uncontrollable monster. It no longer matters whether Democrats or Republicans are in charge. The monster will continue to be fed with your money and your liberty. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until next time. Sivis Pashem Parabellum.
For the first time since its inception, RBN is offering a limited opportunity to you, the listener, to join our quest. You will be provided an effective platform on both internet and satellite broadcasting, and also gain the opportunity to both share your creativity with our producers and voice your message with thousands of patriots. Interested? Call 800-724-2719, extension 3, for details.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause. laws against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
Welcome back. All right. So, Toynbee's study of history, just as some evidence of this, you know, and this is, I don't know, one of the leading figures of on the subject, a Fabian socialist, and, you know, the man when it comes to macro history. The last however long in contemporary history, Arnold J. Toynbee. So, part seven, Universal Churches, chapter 27, The Role of Civilizations in the Lives of Churches. And section 2, chapter 27, Civilizations as Regressions. Civilizations as Regressions. Yeah, speaking of the conversion or the subversion and perversion of language, Toynbee writes, we have been trying to see how history looks if we break with our modern Western habit of viewing the histories of churches in terms of the histories of civilizations and adopt instead the inverse standpoint, and this has led us to think of civilizations of the second generations as overtures to the living higher religions, and consequently to regard these civilizations not as failures branded by their breakdowns and disintegrations, but as successes in virtue of their service in helping these higher religions come to birth. On this analogy, the civilizations of the third generation are presumably to be thought of as regressions from the higher religions that had arisen out of the preceding civilization's ruins. For if the mundane miscarriage of those now defunct civilizations ought to be judged to have been redeemed by its spiritual sequel, then the mundane achievement of the living civilizations in breaking out of their ecclesiastical chrysalises and setting out to live a new secular life of their own ought likewise to be judged on the criterion of its effect on the life of the soul, capital S. What an interesting concept. And this effect has manifestly been an adverse one, Toynbee writes. So, to the language. If we take as a test case the eruption of a modern Western secular civilization out of the medieval Western Respublica Christiana, we may find it illuminating to begin on the lines of our inquiry in the first half of this chapter by citing the evidence of words that had undergone a change of meaning and usage. And we may begin with the word cleric, side by side with the clerk in holy orders. We have the humble secular clerk who in England performs minor office work and in America serves behind the counter in a store. Conversion, which once implied the turning of the soul toward God, is now more familiar in such contexts as the conversion of coal into electric power or the conversion of a 5% into a 3% stock. We hear little of a cure of souls, but much of the cures of the body performed by drugs. And holy day has become holiday. All this betokens a linguistic disetherealization, which merely symbolizes a secularization of society. And that we have seen on the increase for at least the last 100 years. And many people have observed it in different ways. It's why we have Adam Curtis's documentary, the 4-part series, Century of the Self. It was the same observation that someone like Stephen Covey made in The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. There was a change, a shift in language around the turn of the 20th century. After reviewing, I think it was 200 books or so, you know, prior to the turn of the 20th century versus afterward. You know, you have before the turn of the 20th century, the character ethic. And then after, the Bible becomes, at least for the early part of the 20th century, Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. Oh, we're in a break. Stick around. I'll be right back.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, with the kids jingle-belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happy season of all, with those holidays.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news. Real talk. Real people, because you can handle the truth. Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
I wrote to you with childhood fantasies. Well, I'm all grown up now. Can you still help somehow? I'm not a child, but my heart still can dream. So here's my lifelong wish, my grown-up Christmas list, not for myself, but for a world in need. No more lives torn apart at wars would never start, and time would heal all. Always win, and love would never end. This is my grown-up Christmas list.
Welcome back. Well done, Natalie Cole. That really kind of is, I mean, that sort of captures the idea. Going through this holiday or holy day season, may it be holy, may there be some reverence. May we, you know, seek in ourselves and others and demonstrate in ourselves the best of mankind, if that's possible. And, you know, I mean, I don't think I need to say that for me, I don't think the idea is separable from the Bible and the God of it. And there is no perfecting mankind as the perfectibilist would have apart from God. It's just not a happening deal. So it's interesting. But, you know, we can aspire to the best in ourselves and one another, and have grace and mercy toward one another. Peace on earth, goodwill toward men, kind of thing. And, you know, speaking of the conversion or perversion and subversion of language, maybe we can step back and just try to resist the onslaught of what I would broadly categorize as dehumanization. I think that's one of the most sinister aspects of what has been happening in our society. Clearly, you know, you go back 50-100 years or so, and one of the things that has been said over and over, what happened in Nazi Germany, if we are to give any credence to what happened, isn't a large part of what happened the dehumanization of one's fellow man, the dehumanization of us all? When you can number your fellow man, and that did happen. I remember working in Great Western Bank in the Fairfax District of Los Angeles back in the 90s, the early 90s, and we used to have these folks that would come in, and, you know, they were all on SS SSI, Uncle Sam gave them lots of money to come over and a little bit more money to stay. It was like, I joke, you know, it was like little Jerusalem or little Russia, depending on, you know, what faction of people you're talking about. And they would come and they spoke in very broken English, but, you know, they would tap their safe deposit box keys on the glass before the bank opened at 9 a.m. And it was very eerie. And this particular bank was in a larger high-rise office building, and there were doors. There was kind of the large vestibule in the main entrance of the building that you would access the elevators and things to go to the higher floors. The bank was on the main floor, so there were doors from that main entrance area, that vestibule, doors into the bank on that side, and then on the opposite side, on the outside of the building, doors on that side. So on mornings when they received their payments, they would be on both sides at both sets of doors with people tapping keys. It was very eerie. So I remember on more than one occasion, there was one gentleman in particular that I remember, but he sat down at my desk one day and said, "Would you like to see my number?" And rolled up his sleeve. And so when we do that to our fellow man, we are obviously dehumanizing not just our fellow man, but ourselves. And to allow ourselves to be degraded to that extent is evidence of, you know, historical evidence of what I think is happening now. And so nothing is more dehumanizing than to say you cannot have a gender, or gender is a social construct. And so it's going to be a fluid thing. And I mean, that's just completely disorienting and dehumanizing. But this is the trip we're on, and the reminders come from the most interesting places, I think, that maybe not so fast. Maybe we shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, macro historian extraordinaire Arnold J. Toynbee reminded us in A Study of History that, as he put it, you know, what emerges, the way that he said it exactly, as I read in the last segment, in breaking out of their ecclesiastical chrysalises and setting out to live a new secular life of their own, these civilizations ought likewise to be judged on the criterion of its effect on the life of the soul, capital S. And so what is that effect? Arnold J. Toynbee, having studied the breadth of the history of civilization, all recorded history, what is the effect? Toynbee says this effect has manifestly been an adverse one. Shouldn't that give us pause before we throw the baby and the bathwater out summarily? Maybe not a good idea. One of my other favorite reminders of this kind of a concept comes from these come from the most unlikely corners. And that should carry even more weight, I think, than the televangelists and the such and such theological seminary, et cetera, et cetera. Those, I think, are doing more damage than, they're doing more harm than anything else. But it's interesting. So one of my other favorite reminders is Jaron Lanier's You Are Not a Gadget, a manifesto. And speaking of the dehumanization, Chapter 2, An Apocalypse of Self-Abdication, which is, it's Chapter 2 in Part 1. Part 1 is titled, What is a Person? What is a Person? It's not just technology that is at work here. There are other forces. The cybernetic technocratic forces are not just technology driven. It's much deeper than that. So Lanier talks about the Turing test. And there was this So he mentions the Turing test. He says the Turing test cuts both ways. Whatever the motivation, Turing authored the first trope to support the idea that bits can be alive on their own, independent of human observers. This idea has since appeared in a thousand guises, from artificial intelligence to the hive mind, not to mention many overhyped Silicon Valley startups. And the caveat here that you don't hear is, go listen to what Jordy Rose says. And, for example, the super intelligent aliens are coming to Earth. Tech Talk. Jordy Rose of Kindred AI presents Super Intelligent Aliens Are Coming to Earth. What? What? This is a Tech Vancouver talk. In June 2017, published July 12, 2017. You still find it on YouTube. So you have your SETI dish and the aliens were summoning, he said. This is a thing that gets left out of the discussion. If all of this infrastructure is being built for something other than ourselves, well, then that means something very different, doesn't it? And that's what he said. It's these things that we're summoning, they're like the Lovecraftian, they're of the sort of Lovecraftian variety, and they don't care about you, much like you don't care about an ant. So if that's, he said it, and this is a guy who has worked in technology circles that only, NASA, Google, the CIA, etc. are able to make use of. What if one and zero are the same? What if they occupy the same state? So anyway, Lanier writes, it seems to me, however, that the Turing test has been poorly interpreted by generations of technologists. It is usually presented to support the idea that machines can attain whatever quality it is that gives people consciousness. After all, if a machine fooled you into believing it was conscious, it would be bigoted for you to still claim it was not. I feel like this is like a John Stossel moment for Jaron Lanier. What the test really tells us, however, even if it's not necessarily what Turing hoped it would say, is that machine intelligence can only be known in a relative sense, in the eyes of the human beholder. And so don't we sort of call to mind Clark's third law? Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So it is at this point, Jaron Lanier offers the following footnote. Speaking of the reminders that come from the curious quarters, this is a footnote in Lanier's You Are Not a Gadget, a manifesto. One extension of the tragedy of Turing's death is that he didn't live long enough to articulate all that he probably would have about his own point of view on the Turing test. Isn't it funny how that happens? Didn't live long enough. Suspicious death. Yeah, just another one in a long line of curious deaths. Historian George Dyson suggests that Turing might have sided against the cybernetic totalists. For instance, here's an excerpt from a paper Turing wrote in 1939 titled Systems of Logic Based on Ordinals. Quote, "We have been trying to see how far it is possible to eliminate intuition and leave only ingenuity. We do not mind how much ingenuity is required. We do not mind how much ingenuity is required and therefore assume it to be available in unlimited supply." End quote. The implication seems to be that we are wrong to imagine that ingenuity can be infinite, even with computing clouds, so therefore intuition will never be made obsolete. And then this final bit in the footnote, Turing's 1950 paper on the test includes this extraordinary passage. And again, this is Jaron Lanier. I wouldn't say by any means is evangelizing. He's not proselytizing here, but this is a provocative reminder. Turing's 1950 paper on the test includes this extraordinary passage, quote, "In attempting to construct such machines, we should not be irreverently usurping his power, capital H, of creating souls, any more than we are in the procreation of children. Rather, we are, in either case, instruments of his will, capital H, providing mansions for the souls that he creates." Again, capital H. So, these to me are curious reminders from the least likely quarters. Jaron Lanier quoting an all but forgotten passage of Alan Turing in relation to the Turing test. The Turing test has come to mean the opposite. We see this kind of adulteration and subversion at work in life. You know, you can't help but remember Greg Walden talking about what the BLM did with a law that he wrote, as an example. And there are countless other examples, and it works so well because of the Milgram experiment, shall we say. Someone with a white coat told us it is so, and therefore it must be. Why would the white coat tell us otherwise? Do we investigate for ourselves? You know, what if we operated on the mindset, you know, the biblical mindset that we all give account for ourselves? Then wouldn't we maybe be a little more scrutinous and less naive? Hopefully so. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Oh, holy night, the stars are bright.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen plan to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile oxysilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Welcome back. You know, for me, this is an interesting time of year to showcase the biblical story, and it all really centers around the message of love and speaking of the adulteration of language, what the King James refers to as charity, which is the highest form of love. It's much more than it's certainly much more than what the kind of derisive pejorative that the term charity has come to represent. It is kind of the embodiment of God's grace and mercy, his long suffering, and so forth. And if you can, grasp hold of that, it's a pretty remarkable concept. And you see it in places like Romans 5:8, for example. But here's kind of an interesting thing that I want to come back to, probably not just through the holidays, but later. This idea, I mentioned recently, I asked the question, what is the what is the victory that overcometh the world that you read in 1 John 5:4, for example, the victory that overcometh the world. And this is no small matter. This is a big deal. In the NASB, the victory that has overcome the world. It's already happened. And what is it? Our faith. And so it's well, I'll finish that thought in the second hour. Coming up, stick around, we'll be right back.
You can count on me. Please have some snow and mistletoe and presents by the tree. Christmas Eve is gonna find me with the love.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our Easy 4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.